But I just remember at some point he muttered, I don't think you should be watching that, James. Like, no, Dad, no, I'll turn it off.
Welcome to Groovy Movies. My name is Lily Austin.
And my name's James Brailsford.
And this week we are talking about The Worst Person in the World, directed by, you say
Joachim Trier? Joachim Trier, let's give that a whirl.
I looked it up on Google and it was Joachim Trier, like Joaquin Phoenix. Joachim, but I think that, I don't know if that's right for a Norwegian, honestly.
I'm so sorry, Bjorn, that I didn't ask you for any pronunciations.
I know.
Oh my God.
I literally just met some Norwegians last week. And shout out to Thomas and Alexander. And I haven't thought to ask them. We could have run through all our pronunciations.
Yeah, with our respective friends.
Yeah,
but no.
With respective Norwegians in our life, but never mind.
Sorry for mangling them. Sorry for mangling the words.
Yeah,
oh well.
Up top, let's apologise. Let's get that in writing. But we're talking about The Worst Person in the World, which I'm still reeling, having watched it again last night and a bit this morning. I'm still pulsating with the emotions of, of the film.
Yeah, it's a fantastic film. It popped to my radar a couple of months ago. I think maybe because I'm on Mubi, it was being pushed on there. But I remember reading a few articles online. And I definitely had it tagged as something that I would like and I should watch. And it just, as it does some days, took a while to get into it, but I was watching it. And yeah, this is what films are all about for me. This is a good film. This is my kind of thing.
Well, you know, I must have told you about the fact that I have the sight.
The sight?
Yeah. When it comes to films, if I see a trailer for a film, I know what I'm going to feel about it. I'm very rarely surprised.
In all our years, you've never told me this supernatural power that you have, cinematic.
Well, to be honest with you, James, I wasn't aware of my gift until maybe a couple of years ago when I suddenly realized that, I'm so rarely surprised. If I see a trailer and I think I'm going to hate that movie, I generally hate it. Or if I think, I'm going to think it's okay, it's generally okay. And if I think I'm going to love that movie, just like with The Worst Person in the World, the minute I saw that ad, I couldn't wait for the film to come out. I was like, that's for me. I'm going to love it.
Wow, you are a marketer's dream.
Well, is that what it is? I like to think I'm an oracle, but it also means that there's few surprises in my life when it comes to the cinema. So I'm always pleasantly surprised when I feel differently. But with this one, I wasn't, and I was happy that I wasn't.
You knew it was going to be a good feeling and it delivered on what you thought you were going to get. I've been trying the past few years to just try not to see any trailers, try and find out as little as possible about a film. It's so difficult because the process of like even reading about a film immediately tells you something about the premise, the setting. Like one of the best times I had at the cinema in the last few years was going with our friend Emily to go and see The Florida Project. And I didn't know anything about it apart from the title. And I think I'd seen a poster for it, but I wasn't sure. So that was it, going into that film knowing nothing. It was brilliant because you had no idea how I was meant to be feeling because I hadn't seen a trailer to cue it up for me.
Oh, and that is such a good film and really
unique.
So, yeah, I mean, I'm the same because of this gift that I have. I try not to see trailers wherever possible because I do want to be surprised. But I saw this one and knew I'd love it. But then the first time I watched it, I wasn't in the best headspace. I wasn't really in the mood to be watching relationships. So I kind of, even though I watched it, I was kind of half on my phone. I kept pausing and like going and doing other things and coming back to it. But even not in the right headspace for it, I still enjoyed it and I could tell that it was good, but I just refused to actually engage with it properly. And then the second time I saw it was last week at a screenplay festival in Shetland, where I've just been at the film festival. And seeing it in the cinema was just, that was the proper experience, you know, and I really felt it and I loved it and I was sobbing and really moved by the whole thing.
Wow. And was it a busy cinema? Was it quite a busy screening?
No. It was quite a small room. It was a small cinema and it was probably half full. And that was perfect for me. That's the way I like to see a film.
So, but let's just, whoa, hold your horses here. We need more information. I especially do. Like, how did you end up at a film festival in the Shetlands? How did it come on your radar? What was the inciting incident that made Lily Jane Austen think, you know what, I'm going to go to the Shetland Isles to go to a film festival?
Well, it's because I'm
pack surprised. Your little rucksack.
Got on a stick. Got on a train, got on a ferry. It was a long trip, but it's adorable actually. It's because I turned 30 this year, which is actually very pertinent to this film. And my mother said, "Can I take you on a trip? Where do you want to go?" And the godfather of film podcast, Mark Kermode, he does this film festival every year with his wife. And they partner with Shetland Arts, this kind of art organization.
Oh, did he go with your mum then? I didn't realize he'd gone with your mum.
Yeah,
oh, that's so cute.
Mom. I know. So watching this movie with her next to me, that was the only thing. Was, you know, there are kind of some quite sexy, cute sex scenes, and this rug scene, this kind of kissing out scene. That's kind of, you don't really. I mean, it wasn't that big a deal, but I was slightly uncomfortable watching it. Like, I was a bit distracted, I should say. I wasn't uncomfortable, but I was just aware of her watching it with me. But it was lovely to watch it with her because she enjoyed it too.
Classic awkward watching adult subject matters with parents.
Well, it's this weird
moments.
Thing of like, oh, I don't want to be thinking about my parents in this moment. I want to be in it totally in my mind. But then I'm also slightly curious to know what they're thinking about these scenes too. You know, it's a weird dichotomy there.
I remember I videoed The Man Who Fell to Earth, a Nick Roeg film starring David Bowie, because I'd heard it was a sci-fi film, so I recorded it late at night on my VHS recorder. The next morning, I was watching it, and Dad was reading the paper, and the film starts off, you know, I can't remember the exact order of events, but what does happen in Nick Roeg films in general is that there are sudden cuts to different scenes that are unrelated. So in the middle of a very pedestrian, nothing much happening, it just hard cut to a sex scene, and then it cut away from it, and I was like, was that a sex scene? Is that going to be the only time it does that? And then my dad, I remember it, like, he was kind of, he wanted to know what was going on there, so he was peering over from the top of his newspaper, and I was like, oh no, should I stop the VHS anyway? But I just remember at some point he muttered, I don't think you should be watching that, James. Like, no dad, no, I'll turn it off.
Oh, how sweet. Yeah, we've all had those moments. But I mean, luckily it wasn't anything as, you know, as awkward as that. But
what did your mum think of Worst Person in the World?
Well, I want to get to that.
Oh, you've lured me in.
Well, I mean, I think we need to explain about the film first. Basically, to give you a bit of an overview, it follows a girl called Julia, who is... We meet her at the start of her kind of adult life. She's at university studying to be a surgeon. This voiceover comes in explaining that she's always wanted to make use of her good grades to have the kind of the kudos, I guess, of studying a course that's very hard. But then she realizes it's not really satisfying for her. So she switches courses to psychology, at the same time dumps the boyfriend that she had then, who seems very sweet. She does psychology, gets with her lecturer, then realizes actually she wants to be a photographer. So she dumps the lecturer, quits uni, spends all of her student grant on cameras, starts dating a model while she's photographing him, and then meets Axel, who's a cartoonist. And at that point, she seems to slightly drift away from photography. She's got this job in a bookshop, and that all happens within like the first few minutes of the film. And then we're there in their relationship with them together. And we quickly then move a bit forward to her going from her early 20s, we move forward to her being 29. And that's kind of where a lot of the film sits, right?
Yeah.
And as I just said, I turned 30 this year. So I think that a lot of what I felt about the film was because I'm basically have been going through very similar experiences and feelings to her. And so I think this is why, for me and most of my friends, I think we're literally the same age as her, or around that age. So her relationships and her feelings about where she is in the world, because that's kind of what the film is all about, right? It's about how should she be, whether she's wasting time and making the most of her life and achieving what she wants to achieve.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, she's I thought she was a really great, like, film character, you know, perfectly realized. You know, it's hard for me to imagine that that person doesn't really exist. You know, it's like to think that it's an, because one of the articles I read in passing was Joachim Trier was talking about how he worked with the actress to develop the character, I think, over a period of months. But it does feel like that's a real living, breathing character in front of you. It's a wonderful performance.
It really is. It's such a, she's so sort of magnetic and fills up the screen and is so likable, but that's not a strong enough word. I just like want to be with her, but she's not at all perfect or imperfect. She's just very, like you said, she's just so well realized.
Watching it, I was she's not perfect. She is flawed, but she absolutely, she's magnetic and engaging. You would want to be in her orbit, like as a friend, or you know, you'd want that kind of person in your life.
Absolutely.
But I found a lot of it very relatable, especially the kind of the sense of kind of trying to fit in, doing the thing that everyone thinks you're meant to do, like get together with a partner, and then there's even sequences about the pressure of having like when you're having your first baby. There's like a sequence about that.
Yeah.
And you can see her just struggling with it, because she does, basically this is someone who doesn't quite fit in, and she's trying to make it work, but it just doesn't, you know, it's not right for her.
Yeah, because I think she's just so unsure of what she wants to do. I mean, that's clear. She keeps changing career path, and then what she finds in Axel is the way their relationship is shown. There's this sort of montage of them, they meet and then it cuts to them moving in together, and then sort of scenes of them talking and hanging out and like cuddling asleep in bed and stuff. And you really, through this montage, you really feel, you don't even notice it as a montage the way you often do. It's not shouting that, but I realized that's what it was, because I was thinking, how do I know that they are such a good couple? It's that through these scenes, you see that they can talk for hours, they understand each other, and they really connect physically and emotionally.
Because it was less of a montage that drew attention to itself.
Exactly.
I think it was like vignettes. It was little parts of a bigger scene that you were kind of being privy to. And that very quickly paints a picture of, oh, like these are the kind of people that they are, and this is a relationship they have.
Yeah.
I would like to say, just watching it, I just thought this is a cinematic film.
Yeah.
These are the kind of films that I get excited about. It's clearly been well crafted on every level. Like, I was just watching it thinking, there's a lot of films these days where the attention to detail in the craft just isn't there, and it just makes films look a little cheap. Like, there's a shot in this film where Julie enters coffee bar, and like it's perfectly setting sun behind her, and it's like it's this golden hour light, and you think, yeah, they've waited for the right time of day, they've set everything up to get, just because it looks magical, and the film has got that all the way through it. Like, there's been a lot of thought and care given to how we're telling this story, how we're presenting each scene, and you know, each scene's usually got some twist or something different happening in it.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. And if we outline the plot, she's not sure what she wants to do with her life. She meets a guy who crucially he's 15 years older than her. So they're in different stages of life. They argue about whether or not to have kids. She meets someone else. She ultimately leaves Axel for the someone else, is with him for a while. It's all very, it's relationship-y stuff, and which I obviously love. But that could easily be very televisual. But the director makes it so interesting, because he basically brings to life, I think, her internal monologue
absolutely.
How she's thinking about these issues, and does it in a really cinematic way. One of the best scenes of the film is after she's met Evend.
We'll go
Evend. No, another struggle. Let's say Evend. Sorry if that's not right. And she's wondering whether or not to be with him, basically, we think. I mean, nothing is said, it's all in her face. But in the morning with her boyfriend, with Axel, and it pauses, and he's frozen. She walks out of the flat. Everyone is frozen in time. And she runs to Evend and is with him and spends a day with him. And it's, you know, and it's clear her wishing to just be in love and not have any consequence, to have time stand still for a moment, just to see what it's like being with this guy before she takes the plunge.
Absolutely, like that scene you've just described, is the one of the highlights of the film, and it because it's the thesis point of the film is about what if, and maybe there's something better, and this is like a way of expressing that sentiment where she's able to just put her entire life on pause and have this time out, and that to me is like a cinematic technique. It's like, how do we explore this without having perhaps two people stood in a room just having conversations with each other? It's how can we show it visually, how can we get that feeling? I mean, and it had a sense of scale about it that I love how it's directed. It gets bigger and bigger. To begin, it's just her boyfriend who's frozen, and the coffee coming out of it is frozen in midair, and then she goes out on the street and you see a couple of passers, but there's the woman on the stairwell, and then finally we go out to the street and it opens up and you've got cars that are stopped, you know, frozen in time, and passers by, and all of it builds this sensation, like you feel in that moment that she's incredibly free in her mind, you know she's got this fantasy world where she can just pause everything, and there'll be, while everything's paused, nobody needs to know.
Yeah, exactly. How did they do that?
Well, looking at it, I just think it's a mixture of two things. I think it's actors standing still, embellished with a little bit of after effects, visual effects work, because I think the thing is, it's so well done, I couldn't say for sure, but I'm pretty sure they've some people probably did move a little bit, so they've had to freeze them in post-production and then kind of add them back into the shot. So I think it's mostly extra stood still with a little bit of tweaking just to get it perfect.
Because that was the thing. The only thing with that scene is it's such a brilliant scene. Every time I've watched it, all I keep thinking is, how did they do that? Which is somewhat distracting.
But also that's a sign of good craft, because it's not obvious that you can't just go, oh, it was CG, because you can't really see it as CG.
Yeah.
And I think, well, they look like real people, so I guess it's real people stood still, but I think it's real people stood still, and then they've helped it out in places where perhaps it was too much of a wobble or a move and they've frozen it. But this is the thing about the film, is they're clearly trying to do as much in camera as possible, because I did see a video online that the coffee coming out of the coffee jug was a piece of like plastic that they modelled. So they just stuck that onto a coffee jug, and there you go, there's your frozen coffee. So things like that, just it requires effort and kind of skill, you know, and to try and make it have a grounded reality.
Yes, but just to circle back to my mother for a second, she liked it very much, but she didn't love it as much as I did. Because we kind of kept rating the films we'd seen at the festival, like which was our favorite, and for me it was second to the top. Young Plato's at the top, if anyone is wondering, and everyone should see it. You can watch it online on Vimeo, and for her it was sort of more in the middle, and she kind of said, well, you know, this is your age group, this is, you know, this is what you're going through right now, and I'm in a different stage of life. But for me, because what ends up happening in the film is that she leaves Axel for this new guy, for Evan, we're calling him, and then later finds out that Axel has cancer and is going to die, and she goes and sees him, and this, it's just, I think, one of the most moving scenes I've ever seen, of her visiting him, and they have this long conversation, and in throughout the film so little is said, actually. It's pretty light on script. There aren't a lot of characters, I noticed in it, actually. There's a lot of time with her. She doesn't have a big network that you see in the film. So there's a lot of time to just be with her feelings that she expresses through her face and what she's doing. And she doesn't actually talk all that much. And I really like that. But in these moments of like kind of deep intimacy, like when her and Axel break up, and then later on when she goes and visits him in hospital when he's ill, he has this conversation with her talking about looking back and collecting physical objects. He talks about how my generation, I mean, he's only in his 40s, but it's true, is, you know, we collected music, we collected albums, we collected physical things, and culture was passed on in that way. And I'm looking back at this time, and he basically says that it's not about nostalgia, it's about not being ready to face death. He doesn't want to die, and so rather than looking for, he can't look forward, he can't look at anything in the future, he can only look back at his memories. And it's just so moving, and he's, you know, and he he sort of cries when he's talking about it. And when he talks to her, they express it so beautifully. It feels, it's just so perfectly acted. It doesn't feel like acting at all. And I was just like sobbing in that. And I thought it was interesting even that I'm sure she was upset by it, that too, anyone would be. But I think it really, really moved me because I was so aware of like, oh, this is like, he's going before his time and there's stuff he wants to do. And I feel like maybe, I mean, of course, everyone feels that way, but it's you're in a different stage, I guess, in your 60s where that's not the kind of, it's not exactly that kind of loss that's going on, I think, or perhaps, you know, because you're looking forward to the people who are dying at an older age, which is a slightly different thing, I think. Sad in this, as much, but just different, you know?
I found all of the kind of emotional, I don't know, all the places that we went with the characters, I found them very relatable. None of it felt phony. None of it felt forced. I felt like it was things that I've either thought about or experienced myself or with my friends. And that's what was quite refreshing to watch about it. It felt like a very contemporary film that felt like the people who made it, who wrote it and directed it, had lived something like this life.
Yeah, well, interestingly, so Joachim Trier, the director, so this is part of a trilogy of films he's made, and he said, kind of looking back on it, I can see how it kind of charts his development and how he thinks about art and relationships, because in his first film Reprise, he wrote that in his 20s, where he was really struggling to figure out whether it was possible to have relationships and also give yourself over to art, which he said, you know, it's obviously a false dichotomy, but that kind of consumed me at that time. And then August 31st, I think it's called Oslo, August 31st. That follows a man in his 30s. And that was a time for him of real crisis where like nothing really makes sense. And he's not sure what he's doing with his art or with relationships. And then Worst Person in the World, he says he really relates to Axel because crucially, you know, he's in his 40s. She's in her late 20s and isn't sure what she's doing and isn't ready to have kids yet or kind of settle down because she's still figuring things out. But for him, crucially, like he is an artist, he's a cartoonist. And he's kind of at this point realized and figured out that actually, yeah, it is possible to do both and he's ready to do both. And so I thought that was kind of interesting that the director, you know, he clearly wasn't cognizantly doing that consciously anyway, but that's actually what's trapped. And it makes sense because Axel does feel very well drawn.
They say write what you know, and it felt like that. You know, it felt like the director was putting part of his life on camera. I have to say, watching it as well, I didn't envy any of those relationships. I was like, you know, they just seem a bit too claustrophobic. I'm quite happy to have my own space.
Well, I wanted to ask you about that, obviously, as a man of the polyamorous persuasion. I mean, I'm that makes me happy to hear, because you're obviously very content in your life, but for me, I love their relationships, and
it's not that I don't dislike the characters. I think they're I don't want that relationship.
I do. I mean, both they all seemed great to me, and that's what I liked about the film very much, is that she has these two important relationships, and that's the thing. I was reading this.
Just have both at the same time. That would have solved every problem in the film. There would have been no drama.
If you wanted a relationship like either of those, you could not have two of them because they are so intense. You can't do that. You have to have a very different kind of relationship to have two of them. There'd have to be some compromise there. But I was reading this interview with him where it was an article with the premise of, this new film is a rom-com, so we've asked the director to list his favorite rom-coms. And I was like, is this a rom-com? And I was thinking about it, and it's not a rom-com because a rom-com is about two people,
it's the pursuit of the romance, isn't it? Yeah,
exactly. And this is about what happens. The pursuit is not even really a factor in it. It's about what happens once you're in the relationship and how that impacts how that impacts the other aspects of your life. And I thought, actually, how many films really show that? Not that many, to just sit and meditate on that and how that makes you feel. And it does that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I say, I was kind of half joking, but was sat watching and thinking, okay, yeah, those relationships, the way that they're having the conduct of the relationships, that just wouldn't work for me, and it's a little bit claustrophobic. And I suspect the way that Julia's kind of portrayed is that it seems claustrophobic to her too in places.
Yeah. Well,
so
yes.
I could even relate to that. I was like, oh right, yeah, I definitely get that.
Well, yeah. Well, I was going to say, do you relate to Julia? Because that's obviously what's going on for her, is that these characters, the men that she dates, are good people. They're yeah. kind to her, and they clearly have good sex life, get on very well, have a laugh together, are supportive of each other. Their relationships are very functioning and healthy, but something isn't right for her.
Yeah.
And I thought that was refreshing to see, because it's nice to see genuine good relationships and not just the guy being a dick. And it was kind of, I mean, it slightly jarred with, there was a slight sort of feminist theme that like ran through the film, right? Of like, because the boyfriends aren't totally perfect, and Axel has this, his comic is a bit sexist, and he has this argument yeah. with like a feminist commentator on TV. And there is a few, and at one point Julia writes an article about oral sex in the age of Me Too. Like, there's this kind of background thing about feminism going on, which I don't think really totally works. But what is feminist, or at least feels in keeping with it to me, is actually showing guys being good guys. Well, maybe that isn't feminist, but it's nice to see, you know, that's a bit different.
Yeah, I agree with you. It is nice, and it is nice to see Julia, this kind of central protagonist, who she's not quite, you know, she's giving it a best shot, but it's something's not quite working for her.
Exactly.
And yeah, yeah. It's again something that you don't often see. Usually characters in these kind of interpersonal dramas are quite driven by their wants and their needs. They've got to get something or do something. They've got to get the guy, they've got to get the job, all these exactly. kind of stuff. To see a woman who's kind of a smart woman, who's sparky, but kind of drifting, not quite sure. And even though the film really doesn't go into, is monogamy the right choice for her, or is polygamy? We don't even go there. Like, her not feeling 100% comfortable in what's meant to be. Like, because the guys are usually, both of them really are quite happy with the situation. It's definitely Julia both times who either sabotages them or finishes them. But yeah, I definitely related to a character who doesn't quite fit in to the traditional relationship model, or is like thinking that this doesn't feel right.
Yes, exactly. And yeah, that is refreshing to see, is that it's not about there's anything wrong with that relationship, there's just something that she is not satisfied with, and therefore the relationship feels claustrophobic because she's still trying to find what it is she needs. And so we have this perfect scene at the end of her just being by herself. She's, because the other thing is that throughout the film, she kind of wants kids, but she doesn't want kids. Mm. She wants them at some point. And Axel, being, he's ready to have kids, you know, he's that much older and is ready for that. And when she breaks up with him, that's clearly a big part of it, is this lack of alignment there. And the guy that she goes out with instead, he says that he, or at least the voiceover explains that he doesn't want to have kids either because he cares about the environment. And his father was also quite, because we kind of see how her father is kind of absent and neglectful. And
yeah.
And he's the same. And it really made me think about how, at least I found that I often in relationships, when a relationship ends, the things that weren't right or weren't compatible in that last one, I'll correct in the next one. So I'll go for someone where all those things are correct in them. But obviously then there'll be other things that aren't, because no one is ever perfect. And that's kind of what happens with...
Put your finger on one hole and then the bloody water spurts out of another hole.
Exactly, James. That is literally a perfect metaphor. And I think that's exactly what Julia does. She gets into this new relationship with a guy who he hasn't got everything figured out. He is also he works in a coffee shop, so kind of similar point in life. And he also doesn't want kids and also has a father who hasn't treated him well. So they can really click on that level. But then when she goes and speaks to Axel, she says to him, there's no one I can speak to the way I can speak to you.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny, is it? You know, because just to people who haven't seen the film, the second boyfriend that she kind of leaves Axel for in the film, she's met him earlier in the film in a brilliant scene, I think.
Yeah, we skipped over. Yeah, go on.
Yeah, but where So Yulia is at a party and she's just feeling a little bit like, I think the impression I got is that she's missing a bit of adventure and spark in her life. Axel is a great guy, but it's like, you know, if you want the Mr. Family Unit, everything's fine, we can talk about it, he's your man. But if you want a bit of spice and adventure, it's not happening.
And also, and his world, it's a signing, right? It's a kind of event to celebrate his new comic book with all these kind of eager guys around him getting his signature, and it's just not, clearly not her world and not that interesting to her.
Yeah, and so she ends up at a house party where she meets
crashes a wedding party.
Sorry, yes, I do apologize, you know, because again, that's entirely relatable, because I've gate crash parties in the past where I've been a total stranger. I've done that in Berlin. I ended up in a house party in Berlin where I didn't know anybody. I just walked in off the street because I heard the music. So I was like, when I saw these scenes, I'm like, yeah, I get that totally.
But later on, when she breaks out of Axel, she says she feels like a bystander in her own life. She doesn't feel like the protagonist. And it feels like when she leaves Axel's party and she looks out over Oslo and then walks and sees this party, it's almost like she's having that feeling then, and then that she wants to take control. She wants to be the protagonist. So, yeah, walks into the party.
And she meets Evind, and they have this, they're both in real committed relationships with other people. So they have this kind of game of, is this cheating? And it's great. It's like, these are the kind of mad kind of things that can happen at house parties and late at night, and you meet someone and you've got this chemistry and it's like a bit weird. And that whole scene.
And you can't do anything, which makes it all the more exciting.
Yeah, it's a wonderful scene. Because when I watched it the first time, I thought that might be it for that character, and then for him to come back, because what it is as well, it's the idea of they had this magical connection, but should she have gone and tried and made a relationship out of this? You know, met him at a house party, and they certainly do have chemistry for miles. Like, I'm not going to, but was that the right basis to then go and leave your current partner for? You know,
yes, exactly. And then with him at the point where she finds out that Axel is dying, she finds out that she's pregnant and hasn't told Evan about it, and is really upset because she doesn't know what she wants to do, as has been the way throughout the film.
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, here is the woman who's never wanted children. Now she's pregnant, and now she doesn't know if she wants, what she's going to do with the baby. You know, so it's like she's now a woman in crisis, because she's in the situation that she never wanted to be in, but now she doesn't know what to do.
Exactly. And she tells him about it, tells Evan, and breaks up with him. The pattern continues of, when she comes to a point of crisis, of uncertainty, then she bows out and gets out, and then she miscarries, so she doesn't even have to make the decision. But then in that final scene, she looks out the window and sees him. It's clearly cut a couple of years forward, and she sees Evan with a woman with very similar hair to hers, I must say. She basically could be Julia. And a baby.
Well, that's what I watch, because she's an actress as well, because it's a nice little twist that Julia's back to doing set photography on a drama. She's taking pictures of an actress who seems a little bit of a quirky actress, and then the actress leaves the set, and we see Julia follow, like, look to see where she's going, and that's where she sees that she's now meeting up with Evan, with her ex-partner, and they have a kid. And it was like, yeah, he's attracted to a certain type.
Well, for me, it wasn't so much that he has one type, though maybe that too, because actually I thought it was interesting that both Axel and Evan, to me, they were quite similar looking and were similar types of people. Yeah, one of them wanted kids and one didn't, but kind of apart from a few things like that, they could connect with her, and I think, like, they seem to.
Axel was a bit too highly strung. He needed to chill out a bit.
He was a bit highly strung. That's true. But fundamentally, they were both kind, supportive partners.
Yes, yeah.
So I kind of thought, she's good at choosing men. I feel like that's not her issue in life. It's just her uncertainty around what to do with
everything else.
Yes, but then when she looks out the window, it's almost like she sees him in a shop, but it's also like, oh, that is what my life could have been. That right there, I'm looking at what I could have chosen.
Yep.
And then she goes home. She has a room of her own. She looks out the window just the way Axel said he liked to look out the window. She's kind of achieved what he's had of just a space to herself. And she's clearly happy. It's a perfect ending.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? At the end, she just kind of realizes perhaps she just needs to be by herself a little bit, and that's okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I can relate to that. I can relate to that. Completely. Yeah, no, it was a wonderful film, and yet again made me think I've been watching too much crap recently. And being a nicely done shot on film as well, and shooting on film again, it changes the way people shoot, because if you're shooting digitally, you can just do as many takes as you want. You can delete any files that you don't like. You shoot film, it costs a fortune. You can't delete. Once you've recorded it, that's it. You spent the money, so it feels like each shot was considered and they were thinking it through, and yeah, it was a wonderful film.
Yeah, it really was. Yeah,
well, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Groovy Movies.
Yeah, I guess that's all that's all we have to say, really. Watch The Worst Person in the World on MUBI, and yeah, thank you
and leave us alone listening. Get out of here, go on. Thank you very much for listening. See you next week. Bye.
Bye.